Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. Many human-animal households include someone who, by choice or default, assumes the bulk of the responsibility for any companion animal's behavior. These folks come in all sizes, shapes, ages, and genders, and they live with all kinds of other people in all kinds of housing in all kinds of environments. In some way, these caregivers are remnants of an earlier era where many moms or mom surrogates stayed home and kept everything running smoothly for the rest of the family. Today, we often speak of our animals as being members of our family in a more symbolic sense. But back then, the animals truly were members of the family, and for very practical reasons. Busy caregivers who lacked the benefits of modern technology needed to make the most of what resources they had, because time and energy most often was in short supply. Lumping the dog or cat in with the kids made good sense. In retrospect, these early human-animal households functioned more like some wild canine and primate social groups. In these, adult caregivers teach their skills to younger members who assume the responsibility for the care and teaching of those who are younger still. Meanwhile, at the opposite end of the spectrum, those individuals past their breeding prime transition into the role of grannies or aunties who assist the biological parents and primary caregivers. This results in a dynamic, lifelong teaching and learning process that addresses the needs of the group as well as those of the individuals in it. It functions as a complex web in which the same individual could assume a teacher role in one context and that of a student in another. Those in every life stage contribute benefits as well as costs. Within the human realm, the "it takes a village" concept of child rearing reflected this same awareness. Implicit in that kind of human companion animal system was the expectation that any human and animal babies and youngsters would grow up, and as they did, they would develop the physical, behavioral, and emotional skills necessary to function independently as well as part of the group. Consequently, when these caregivers said they treated the dog like one of the kids, they meant exactly that. The successful ones didn't expect, nor did they desire, their animals to remain babies forever, any more than they wanted their human babies to. Today's animal caregivers often don't function the same way. Often there's a primary animal caregiver, but other members of the household are willing to help in any animal care should the need arise. Compare these individuals to today's super caregivers who either choose or are expected to do everything related to the animal for everyone in the household. Sometimes they acquire this role because they perceive themselves, or others perceive them, as the dog or cat person in the group. Other times they gain the responsibility simply because they work at home, and others assume that any work they do is less time-consuming, demanding, or even important than their own. Because of this, households with super animal caregivers can create a domino effect that benefits neither the human-animal relationship or those between the humans living in the home. Like many others, super caregivers and other members of the household often view any animal residents as symbols. When those animals develop behavioral problems, though, this may include potent contradictory and even irrelevant symbolism. Suddenly, the animal whose presence everyone in the household wanted becomes the sole responsibility of the super caregiver. However, changing animal behavior requires a consistent response from everyone in the household. Super caregivers who relish their role as the resident animal expert, dog person, or cat whisperer may go into denial and insist they can do it alone. The more significant a role this status plays in their self-identity, the more vehemently they may insist on doing it alone. If forced to accept help, some may feel resentful. Others may feel they've let the animal or other people in the household down. "I should have been able to do it alone," they moan. "It's my job." Some of them may even feel like failures. Other super caregivers accept that they can't change the animal's behavior alone. But when others in the household don't agree, well, you don't need to know much about human behavior to imagine what kinds of negative human emotions this could trigger too. Stuck in the middle of this sits Rocky the dog. He only wants to achieve maximum stability in that environment. His marking the couch has nothing to do with son Harry's big soccer game next week or the pop algebra quiz he thinks he failed today. It has nothing to do with husband Tom's lousy day at work or his failure to fix the leaky faucet, which is now leaking more than ever. It has nothing to do with PMS teen Susie texting her boyfriend that she hates him and hopes he dies. It has nothing to do with the fact that super caregiver mom loves the couch Rocky peed on, or that her husband hates it, or that supermom's folks are visiting next week. None of this matters relative to resolving Rocky's behavioral problem. But nothing can be done to help him in a meaningful way until all these strictly human issues that his peeing inexplicably exposed get resolved first. For those who have never experienced such an unraveling of human relationships triggered by a pet's problem behavior, such human responses may seem incomprehensible and even ludicrous. But for those who have found themselves embroiled in such sequences, these may seem painfully real. On the upside, sometimes human meltdowns triggered by an animal's behavior may release pent-up emotions and concerns and clear the way for better human communication within the household. When that occurs, working together to resolve the animal's problems seems doable, and even so simple they wonder why they made such a fuss. On the downside, sometimes these meltdowns reveal much more serious human problems that will require professional help to resolve. In the worst-case scenario, the people in the household blame their outbursts on the animal. "If Rocky hadn't peed on the couch," they tell themselves and each other, "it never would have happened. It's all his fault." In such a way, Rocky becomes a sacrificial lamb who gets taken to the shelter or even euthanized because he causes too much trouble. But it doesn't have to be like that. If you sense yourself or another member of your household veering too much in the super caregiver direction, consider rethinking this approach. Everyone in a household shared with animals needs to recognize that there may be times when they will all need to help with the animal's care. In the case of behavioral problems, this care may extend over a long period of time. For the sake of the animals, as well as the people, it's far better to recognize this possibility when things are going well, than wait until animal problems arise.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.